life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility, but driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Just this second, you said the opener for the podcast.
I
did? Is, you know how you go into a Walmart or a Kmart and they have a little round bin of like the super deep discount DVDs that are like $99? Yeah. This podcast is like that idea for words. We have words in buckets on sale. We're bringing them to you and it's mostly about cars. Welcome back to the podcast.
Awesome. I agree. Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to discuss. But before we get there, before we begin, we just want to thank our TV sponsors for season
Definitely.
Two that we're currently in. And by the way, episode two is up on Vimeo, if you have not caught that.
Well, episode two is actually just posted on YouTube today. All the episodes are on Vimeo.
All the episodes are on Vimeo.
And they're all
that's
coming
right.
to Amazon soon.
There's thank you for the correction. Yes, that's all on YouTube. So you can see that. Vimeo is the whole season, but that is our sponsors are Covercraft, Griot's Garage, and our friends at Auto Tempest as well. And if you use the code every day for Covercraft and Griot's Garage, Covercraft will give you free shipping. Griot's Garage will give you 10% off your order.
And you may have heard on the last couple podcasts, we did a giveaway. We did a giveaway on all our social media, thanks to our friends at Covercraft, and Alex won. And Alex has asked for a sunshade, and that is in process with Covercraft to get that sunshade to him, which is great. And I say that because next week is a big Griot's giveaway. So listen now, because we're going to be posting more stuff. It's probably going to be your expedition, I think, for the
mileage. It is going to be the expedition.
That'll be perfect.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
Yeah,
we got a big
so.
Kind of starter kit product coming from Griot's that is really awesome. So be listening for that and watching for that as well. We have a really cool question up front that came from last podcast's questions, and then two car debates, one for Josh in Germany and one for Vincent in San Francisco. And both of them, I do see the common thread, have a BMW theme.
Like that, huh?
I'm going to try to wrench us away from BMW a bit, but there's some interesting stuff there. But first off, we should get to this question.
Yeah, from TC Car Guy on Instagram. Thank you for writing this. This was something that we decided to do up front because it's a little bit longer of an intro, a little bit longer a question. And what I like about it is it speaks to the dynamics that Todd and I crave and love and look for.
Yeah.
That cars that we have learned our own skills in and developed skills in. And the question is, if we were to host a track day, with the intention being to show the differences in dynamics between the common drivetrain layouts, and it gives four drivetrain layouts here. So front engine, rear drive, front engine, front drive, mid-engine, rear drive, and then finally all-wheel drive. Now, there is, of course, the rear, and you know
which car
that
one
I'm talking
about. I covered that one, too.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
So that's got to be in there, too. But I think this is really interesting. And again, because you and I have developed our skills, honed them, driven these cars. I think it's going to be an interesting discussion here about what we would recommend. And I've actually got multiple cars for each of these categories.
I have two for each category because I tried to pick something that gave you a good and bad or two different executions of the same idea in every place.
Interesting.
So I tried to chase that. And yeah, it's ultimately five categories. I'm just going to jump in real quick with front wheel drive.
Go for it.
And what you need to have in front wheel drive is you need to have something. And I'm picturing this day. I mean, while we're dreaming, let's just dream. I'm picturing this
day. Let's do it. We do it all the time.
You get there, and there are both track and skid pad opportunities. And actually, in some cases, a lot more skid pad than track, because the whole point here is to get the car out of shape, to put it in a bad situation and see what it does.
Yeah, right.
And so the place to start is genuinely, there are other cars in this category, but some sort of entry-level front-wheel drive like a Toyota Corolla, because all that will do.
Are you saying
understeer.
You brought a Toyota Corolla to this track
day? I am saying I brought one.
Do Corollas belong at track days?
In this case, yes.
Besides the parking lot, I mean.
Well, you know, who knows? Hey, run what you brung. But the point is, but the whole point here is to have a kind of base entry-level front-wheel drive. And so I'll just go with the Corolla just to show the natural safety setup of every manufacturer, which is understeer. It's understeer without any other characteristics.
Fair enough.
It just does understeer. We wouldn't be in that car long, but that is necessary.
10 seconds and we're done.
Yeah. You get a couple passes. You discover the understeer is awful. You hear the tire squeal and you move on to the Fiesta ST.
Okay.
Because while there are other cars that do this, it is such a light car and chuckable car that you can see understeer, but you can also get it to rotate under braking, get it to rotate without being under braking. You can get it to rotate just by lifting off the throttle.
Yeah, true.
So you can find that
drive
rotation
with the right
point.
Foot.
Seriously, you can find that rotation point in front-wheel drive, because front-wheel drive, as the Corolla will have already shown us, only wants to understeer unless it's set up right and you can force it to rotate. And the Fiesta will do that happily and gladly. But you can't get too far out of shape because you put your foot in it. And the front now tucks in and goes again.
Sure, sure. In that category, I actually chose the Fiesta ST as well because of all the dynamics you just suggested. But I also have the Honda CR-Z in there to show what a low power but still fun car can do. And yes, when you
that's
push
good.
It, it'll understeer.
Of course.
But there's some dynamics to be found there. There's
that's good.
Surprise and delight. And I really like that car for that reason.
Okay.
So that is in my category, the front engine, front wheel drive.
That's cool.
Again, very surprising. And again, this category doesn't have to be the most power.
Mm-hmm.
That's honestly, some of the other cars I suggest here do have quite a bit of power, but that's, you know, I want to feel that dynamics and, you know, what can front wheel drive do, because it's only going to be exacerbated once you add a whole bunch of power to the front wheels that are trying to do everything.
Sure, sure, for sure. Absolutely.
And those cars are out there, but,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, let's start with low power before we graduate to something like a, you know, Focus RS or, you know, front wheel drive bias, I guess. So that'd be a Golf R or something,
Golf R.
Along that.
Well, but
lines.
I even imagine if we're talking about that world, imagine throwing a Mazda Speed 3 in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy fun to drive and will absolutely understeer, but will also torque steer on you. So you can be like, surprise, torque steer.
Lots of lessons in a Mazda
Speed
3.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely.
All right, so moving on to the front engine rear wheel drive category.
Oh, okay, all right.
Let's stay front engine for now.
Okay.
Of course, the Honda S2000 has to be in this category.
Okay.
Although it technically is a front mid-engine car.
Yes, that's true.
But the engine just happens to be ahead of you, so let's call it front engine. That car really speaks to me.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. We've recommended it endlessly. You've heard it before. I've got a bunch of other cars in this category that are kind of moving up for different reasons. An E46 BMW M3 or an M2.
Okay, yeah.
For that feeling, for that dynamics and adding power. A Mustang GT is on this list. Just a solid V8 Mustang.
Okay.
And then at the very top end, once we've graduated past all those cars, you've got to get in a C7 Corvette Z06.
Interesting. Yeah.
This has to be on that list to feel what this beast is.
It's good. I like that. And it's still, for cars of that power, I was talking to somebody about this today because they were asking me about the Hellcat and the horsepower, but of course, 700 horsepower, right?
Mm-hmm.
707. And I made the comment.
Like it matters.
Exactly. That extra seven, you're really going to feel.
You're really going to feel this, but no, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. But I made the point that, you know, the Z06 has got, quote unquote, only 650.
Yeah, it's
okay?
Such a slugger.
But it's almost 1,000 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
Which is a huge deal.
Yeah.
And just the way it carries its weight. I actually had the C7 and the Z06 as an even better choice. I had the C7 on my list as well.
Good.
And I'm trying to go with two cars. With only like one exception, everything on my list is also cars that you could go buy right now.
Mm.
So I try to stay in like current stuff that is currently being sold. I love your S2000 idea. Of course, I just brought up the Mazda Speed 3. There's some here that aren't.
Sure.
But I try to stay in that world. So Corvette C7 Z06 would be great. It's a great one to graduate to. But the starter car there, I have to go there, is the 86. Because I feel like
fair
the
enough.
86 and the Vette, it's the same idea, just cranked up to 11 to get to the Vette.
Yeah.
It's the same essential basic body shape. It's the same essential components. You just cranked it up to 11. So start in the 86, don't have a lot of power, but you understand that low center of gravity, well-balanced rear-wheel drive, will slide when you want it to, can duck into a corner. You get all of that under your belt, so to speak, and then you graduate to take this idea and light it on fire, and now you're in the Z06.
Yeah, you're right. I like the lightweight nature of the 86 too,
mm-hmm.
and just feeling that before we add power. I do like that. But then, you know, there is a time to add power.
Well, and I like your other ones there, though. I mean, the E46 is great. The current M2 is wonderful. I mean, they're all in that same essential setup. But I liked the idea that even like silhouette-wise, that 86 and C7, you can see the lineage there and be
sure.
like, okay, it's the
sure.
same kind
I
of
wouldn't
car.
Call it a mini Corvette by any stretch, but I can see,
you see
what
my
you're
point.
Talking about.
Yeah.
All right, so moving up to the mid-engine rear-wheel drive, it's the two cars you and I own for very different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
One is a very
it's funny, I completely
neutral
agree with you. I completely
mid-engine Cayman, and one is a neutral until it's not, Elise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And learning how to keep the power on through the corner in mid-engine rear-wheel drive cars.
Yeah.
And what that teaches you about your driving. Those two are at my bottom end, interestingly.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But to go real high, I love the 650S Coupe McLaren.
Okay. Yeah,
so
can't go
the
wrong,
next generation though. After the 12C, we'll say.
Yeah.
That lightweight feeling is still there now with a whole lot more power. That changes the dynamic dramatically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting car. So I would put that up there.
Okay. Well, I had the Lotus and the Porsche for similar reasons, but just to speak on that a bit more, the Cayman is probably, if not definitely, the most docile mid-engine on the planet. It's not really prone to understeer, and it's not really prone to snap oversteer either.
No, it's not.
You really have to get very out of shape for that car to bite you. The Lotus is not that way. The Lotus
very much so.
Will understeer. You don't have enough power
push,
in it.
Yeah.
It'll just push. It'll understeer. It's got tiny tires in the front comparative to the rear, and it'll understeer.
Sure.
Try to drift it at low speed, it just understeers. But at the same time, you get enough power, you disrupt it, that back will come around and see what the problem is. It is on its
or
way.
Or create the problem.
Exactly. It is on its way, and you better catch it quick. And you've got a manual steering rack, so you better be fast. And I've had both of those experiences in my Lotus, let alone other Lotuses. I've been in both those situations where, oh, look, it's pushing. Oh, look, the back's coming around. So it is the unforgiving, I would say, traditional nature of mid-engine cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cayman is all the goodness of mid-engine, but most of the bad is just kind of filed away, which is a really interesting comparison.
Most of the bad, I would say, reveals itself at higher speeds than the Lotus.
Oh, for sure. No, it's still there.
It's very much there, but that at the higher speed, let's say above 90,
I think
start to really dance on that edge.
I think the average person is never going to get to a place where they're going to find that in the Cayman, though, unless they're really like hunting. And I think in a track day like we're talking about, you probably wouldn't really find it in the Cayman, but you find it in the Lotus.
In the Lotus, you should. You definitely would. And like I said, especially at lower speeds.
Well, there was that one year when I think it was either the 08 or 09 Motor Press Guild track day. Where over the course of the day,
people just didn't understand that car.
Four guys spun the Lotus. These are journalists. Now we've talked before about how some car journalists can really drive and some really cannot. But it was the first
makes
year.
You wonder.
It was the first year of the factory supercharged Elise, and I watched four different journalists spin that car coming out of a corner.
Lift off, oversteer. Welcome to it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right this way through the gravel, through the hedge, through the hay bales. All right, so moving on up to the all-wheel drive category. I found this pretty interesting. There are all-wheel drive cars, a lot of them out there.
For
made,
sure, yeah.
But none that I think reveal their character more than the Mitsubishi Evo 10, first off. The latest Nissan GTR, so the R35 Nissan GTR.
Agreed.
Whatever generation from 09 up to current
sure,
version.
Sure.
And an Audi R8.
That's interesting. Yeah, I see that.
I want you to feel that quattro and the difference between all of these setups. The power distribution in the R8 is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
But again, those are also, interestingly, different platforms. They're all all-wheel drive, but some are front engine, some are mid-engine.
Yeah.
So very different power setups.
Interesting.
And then four-cylinder, six-cylinder, eight-cylinder.
That's excellent. I did not get that involved. But on all-wheel drive, the thing I wanted to make sure came across here is I wanted, if you would, what I would describe as traditional all-wheel drive and trickery all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. Traditional, something like an STI or a WRX.
Oh, sure.
And you may have to go back a generation even.
Where
because
it's breaking a little bit.
Well, because that's the thing. The current ones, well, Subaru all the way back is a 50-50 all-wheel drive split. If you put those cars on the lift and you spin a wheel, you watch them all move.
Right.
And they all move at the same time. I mean, I know there's diffs involved, but I mean, it's just a 50-50 split. There's nothing else going on. The current ones do have some brake vectoring, which is a little bit of cheating, but ultimately it's an all-wheel drive 50-50 split system. The Evo and the GTR, and I would almost prefer the GTR because A, it's still being sold, and B, it is the bigger boy. But either one work because both of them do the same thing, and they actually proactively push power around. It's not brake vectoring. It's actual torque vectoring.
Right.
They push power around to make you a rock star. And when you drive, that's why we've done the STI and the Evo discussion many times, you drive those back-to-back, you can feel that difference in the corner. And that would be something fascinating to feel where the car just goes, oh, well, I don't really care that much about physics, and it finds you grip.
Yeah, which is astounding. It's staggering.
It's crazy, and it is a different style of driving. And the Evo does it well, and the GTR does it even better, but it is three times the cost. So there's those realities. But I think having that comparison of just here is a really well set up straight 50-50 all-wheel drive set up for enthusiasts. Now let's do witchcraft on top of that.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. Well, finally, rear wheel drive, rear engine. Got to have a 911 in there. And the reason I bring this up is because it is in a category by itself by virtue of braking.
I agree with that.
So you're coming in hot to a corner, and you can brake so much harder and later than everybody else because the harder you brake, well, that weight of the engine is pushing the back end of the car down.
But don't brake and turn.
But don't brake and don't turn. Break it.
Please, please don't brake and turn.
So you're neutral through the corner, and then it's a completely different time period when you jump back onto the throttle.
Yeah.
Unless you want to drift your 911 around the corner.
Yeah. Well, and I actually did two here. Because I think you have to have that eight, like we just had in the M3 E30 versus 911 piece. You need to have an 80s Carrera next to a current 991.
Because of size and weight?
Because of the way the rear engine is or isn't a problem. And that, to me, is the same thing going on with the Lotus and Cayman discussion back in mid-engine. That 80s 911 will bite. It will be perfectly happy to bite you if you get it wrong.
It's like a Lotus.
The 991
cause a problem.
The 991 is going to do everything it can to hide the fact that it's rear engine at all. Because it's gotten bigger, and because they've moved the engine forward and everything about the dynamics, it's very hard, still possible, it's very hard to get a 991 as wrong as you can get a classic 911. That's why I would do 80s and the 991 and talk about how much has this rear engine become less of an issue.
Excellent. Yeah, well, if you guys have a chance to drive any of these cars, we highly recommend it. Of course, we'd love to have the transporter roll up with all of these cars.
It'd absolutely
probably take a couple transporters with everything.
That would
what
be
a track day
the
that
everyday
would be.
Driver car track day, for sure. That'd be
I mean,
amazing.
That is that is right there, I think, in the usual suspects category of everything that we talk about from dynamics, and we compare just about every car we drive to the benchmark of cars. What's interesting to me is I hope that changes and morphs and becomes different. Some cars are added, other cars are replaced by virtue of new technology or whatever that is. But there's still these benchmarks like the FRS, like the S2000.
Yeah.
You just can't deny.
Well, I have a story for later to relate to another question, but I actually drove the Lotus this week for the first time in probably 6 weeks.
Yeah, I saw. You're a pretty happy camper.
Oh, my gosh. It's just that I was so struck all day, besides the fact that I enjoy driving it. And there's, look, I could go on about the problems with it, too, the things about it that are just require sacrifice, okay? But at the same time, I was so struck.
The water.
I was so struck driving it all day about how that is one of those moment in time cars. And I feel like the S2000 is in that camp as well.
Sure.
Where for
sure.
whatever reason, this car got made, got through safety regulations, was sold to the public, and will never go back.
Yeah.
It's just it's a total moment in time car. And it's awesome. But there's really not anything else to put it with because it's just like, how did this get through kind of car?
I like the segue because speaking of moment in time, Josh in Germany is writing to us as a BMW lover and also asking about classic cars. He's currently in Germany. Bit of a twist here. He is not looking for something new. He's looking for a car, a classic car, that he can bring back home with him to the U.S., when he leaves Germany in 2020. So if you're listening to this podcast after that, we still have a few years, but a couple of years. But anyway, he would be home at that point. But he's looking at doing this is because he won't have to pay for shipping. Whatever circumstances that is. So he's looking for something that is more than 25 years old. So 95, 94, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And older. Must be manual. He would like four doors. He said, see my wife.
Yeah.
But it's not critical. He's currently got an 09 BMW 135i, and they have a baby on the way. Congratulations on your family. And the classic car will more than likely be a secondary car when they're back in the United States. Something unique, something collectible. He's not brand loyal, but I think you are to BMWs. And he's stopping me hard cap, 25,000 euro.
Yeah.
Classic car. Rarely do we get the opportunity to go shop for classic cars.
And I'm not good at this, I realize. As I start to dig
this
into this,
fun.
I'm like, because here's where I got myself stuck. It's not the fact of getting the older car. Maybe I'm down a rabbit trail here that doesn't matter, but I kind of feel like Josh has got an opportunity to bring something over that isn't common here.
True.
I thought of lots of things that are old enough.
Unimogs, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. I thought of lots of things that are old enough, but where I got myself stuck was trying to think old enough and actually unique. we don't get it here much.
Unique can mean bad. Actually.
It can. It can. So I actually
what
have
a unique
couple
baby.
I have a couple thoughts, but I don't feel like I ever landed on the perfect answer here. But I have a couple things I want to bring up for sure.
Okay, interesting. All right. So as I said, he's got a 135. He's also got a 1979 Mini Cooper. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah, very.
So obviously in a different country, but he's like you. He's saying he's a small car guy.
Mm-hmm.
He started looking at Skylines, but now the market seems to be saturated. Now this 25-year rule is now in effect here, or the rule
for
is
sure.
up. So the car will not see any track time. It's just meant to be driven and enjoyed on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
We'll leave it there. It's a broad search, as he says. And he's only 2 hours from the ring. So, Josh, if you can make it down, love to see you. If you can go on the trip, that'd be awesome. But at the very least, we'd love to say hello. So
for sure,
if
for
you
sure.
can make it. That's a soft open for the upcoming 2018 pilgrimage trip.
It is happening. We just don't have registration open yet. Registration is going to open in a few weeks. It is going to happen that first weekend in August. I believe the dates are 2 through 7.
Mm-hmm.
That is updated on the website. More info to come. But that's happening soon for sure.
All right. So back to your debate here, Josh. I'm going to start out with saying that many cars were available in the U.S. There are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say the Audi RS2, something like that.
Mm, that's a cool one. Yeah.
Not available in the U.S., or, you know, there's a few here. And I would say, don't quote me on this, but there are more top-quality classics closer to the original and more of them available in Germany and available in Europe than they are in the States.
Maybe, yeah.
Generally speaking, of course, there's caveats, depends on the car.
Sure, sure.
But there's so many over there. We just see classic cars constantly. Maybe it's because we're getting ourselves in front of them, but...
Because we're going to places like the ring. It's like, look at that car.
Well,
look at that car.
But
yeah.
There are a few exceptions, and I want to put this out there. I know you're into BMWs, so here's my not BMW choice for you.
Good for you. Okay, good.
With. It's a 1980
okay.
Mercedes-Benz 350 SL with a 4-speed manual.
Hmm, okay.
Now, you can find that car in the U.S., but again, it's rare.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering, by virtue of bringing a car over, you might be able to find one here, but it's going to be, you know, hard search, all that stuff.
Yeah,
so if you get one and bring it over, then...
Interesting.
Okay, yeah, you could still get one here, but look at the rarity of what I've got.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
An SL just cruising with the manual? That could be cool. In the 1980 with the new headlights, I really liked that car.
Okay, all right.
Just kind of a fun cruiser car. Again, no track time, so take it out on the weekends.
That.
Just enjoy
that.
Yourself. So now my BMW choice for you is because this car is very rare. It's the 73-74 2002 Turbo.
Ooh, okay, that's good.
Just over 1,600 were built because of the oil crisis in 1973. So this is a car introduced at the Frankfurt Motor Show in 1973.
Okay.
But then, the oil crisis happened. Even though I don't know why that car would have been affected.
Yeah.
I mean...
But turbo is now a bad word. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
That brought us the Mustang too, and let's all have a moment of silence for the Mustang
that.
Too. Yeah.
So 2002 turbo. And again,
okay.
You can find them in the U.S., but if you find the opportunity to get a nicer one in Germany...
Yeah. What are the prices on those? Are they within the price for this? I would think the turbos would be the thing that would blow that out.
Yeah, I may be off on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the other problem is, let's say Porsches worldwide... They've been affected by the price increase.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter where you
find. You're not
going to find
a deal on a Porsche in Germany, really. It's just still going to be the same as everywhere else.
Right. Now, with the 2002 Turbo, maybe. Mm. But I'm saying you might find more of them.
Sure. I see that.
Maybe they're closer to original.
Okay. All right. I see where you went.
I mean, I have never seen a 944 Club Sport RS until we went to Germany.
Fair. Yeah, those have got to be worth some money, though. But yeah,
but that's
cool.
The thing. I think they're way above 25,000 euros. And of course, I'd love for you to find a 1993 Porsche 911 RS America, but...
Well, if you got money to spend.
Anyway, so I'm looking at that Mercedes-Benz for you just because it's a cruiser and because Mercedes manuals are so non-existent.
Yeah.
That's why I went there, and I think it'd be just a cool... unique, and then it'd be a conversation piece.
For sure.
But then the turbo, the BMW 2002 turbo, and I may be, again, way out of the weeds price-wise.
Okay. Well, actually, while you were talking, I had this thought that I hadn't thought originally, but I did have this thought. I wonder if 928 prices are still pretty low over there now.
I was wondering about that car, too. I mean, the real nice ones here are astronomical.
They're starting to get way up there.
Wish I still had mine.
And the ones that you can afford are pretty beat down. But I wonder if Germany's avoided. I actually didn't look that car up prior, so I'm kind of speaking out of turn here. But I'm wondering right now if that's one of those that you could get away with, finding a really nice one for a deal in Germany, and you bring it back over here. That's the other thing I thought about. It's a car that if you have it over here for a couple of years and you want to sell it, you'll probably make some money out of it. I also was thinking along those lines. And I wonder if the 928 might work for that. Mm. I think you're right. Some of the unique 944s, I don't know about that, but I do think you could get a deal on a 928, bring that over here, just enjoy it, and then sell it when you want. I do wonder about that. I did find a good number. I went looking because I was curious, what are the prices in Germany? I was looking earlier for E30 M3s. What are those prices?
Ooh.
And they're the same as they are here. They're wickedly expensive.
Yeah, that's the problem.
What's interesting is just below the M3, I think it was the 328, so just below the M3. Those are in your budget. And I feel like, and maybe this is just my perception being the crazy car guy that I am and going to places like Lemons, but I feel like all of the nice, and I know this isn't right, but I feel like all of the nice E30s that aren't M3s are already trashed. I feel like I don't see nice ones of those.
Yeah, they're few and far between, but the nice ones.
So I wonder about finding the non-M3 E30 generation. Like as high as you can get, close to the M3.
Okay.
Just get a nice one. I found a few online that were actually, they were very nice. They were in great shape.
Hmm.
And they're in your budget. Bring that back here. You know you can unload it when you want to for cost or better. And it's unique because it's a BMW E30. So it's the ultimate driving machine icon, BMW, you bought in Germany. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I thought of that if we're going to stay BMW. Also thought, of course, I think it's got to be on the list somewhere. E39 M5s. What are those going for in Germany?
Interesting.
That may be out of there. But I do wonder about that. And that's a unique one.
It is. And again, to my point, you can find them here.
Yeah.
But if there is something unique about them and you find a really nice one or
it's a cool story
to bring it over, plus free shipping.
And then I have my car that I really like for this. But it is oddball. I did find a couple. It is oddball. What I like about it is it's going to be like nothing you've had. They were never here.
Hmm.
You can find them right-hand drive and left-hand drive. You want the left-hand drive one. You did sell them in Germany, left-hand drive.
Okay.
And I think when you're done, it's the kind of car you put on, bring a trailer, and people will swarm around it.
Okay.
The Escort Cosworth.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Now, I do think that might be newer than 95. I don't know when they started making them. I know they made them to like 99 or so. I don't know when they started making them. That's the only real problem with this idea. I don't know if it's old enough.
93, I think
maybe,
you can get Escort Cosworth.
But I found a few today that are in your budget. They have the crazy double wing, and it's just, they look like nothing else.
Are you talking about the Mercure XR4Ti?
No, I'm actually talking about the Cosworth Escort.
The actual Cosworth Escort.
Yes, with the crazy double wings. Clarkson had one. They were crazy looking cars.
They're very simple inside.
Yeah.
But they're all about the engine.
Yeah, and they're fast and they're unique.
Interesting.
And I think you could unload that car easily here, but I also think you would just enjoy. That's the kind of car that whatever speed it goes, you enjoy driving it. And then you take it to Cars and Coffee and everybody goes, I've never seen one of those.
It's got this mythical quality like Skylines do.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think that's a key thing. The Skyline, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm chasing Skylines. Who's getting Cosworth Escorts from Germany and shipping them to the U.S.? Nobody.
Yeah, true.
So that's why I brought that one up.
I think
that's a thought.
Like it. Definitely. All right. So is that where you're landing?
That's the place I'm landing. My concern with the Cosworth is it old enough? But I think that's the unique price-wise. I think that's the right place.
93s. I think that'll work fine.
For sure. Yeah. If you can find a good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for writing. Really appreciate it, Josh. And this is going to be really interesting. Let us know what your search leads you to.
Yeah,
and
for
if
sure.
You've got your own search and your own debate. Love to hear from you guys. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com or the website that is just straight up EverydayDriver.com.
Yep.
Again, write to us with your own debate. And
we get a ton of good debates from you guys, so thank you for writing in.
We have.
We do scan them all. We're trying to group them up, and they're great. They're
I will
really
also
thank
apologize
you.
In advance if we cannot get to yours. Hopefully that you can glean and take something from others'
Hopefully,
debates,
yeah.
And you kind of know what our headspace is and kind of how we would shop, but... Hopefully that helps, and like I said, looking forward to hearing from you. We will take a very short break and come right back.
Hey guys, you may have noticed March Madness is here. If you're a person that is obsessed with March Madness, I have an idea for you. There's a way you can make a boatload of money this weekend betting with MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, perfect time. Why? Because the madness of March is here. Lay down some money, score big on those college hoops. You can join thousands of online players. Start betting right now at mybookie.ag. That's right, mybookie.ag.
Do you feel sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, fast and without any hassles. Because you're wasting your time betting anywhere else, and they even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after tip-off.
Join now and MyBookie will even match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can even enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. Use promo code DRIVER for this show. Promo code DRIVER to activate this offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid.
Here's some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. It's kind of weird, right? Well, here's another tip you might also not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars.
That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used.
And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid. You know, so you'll know if you're getting a good deal before you buy. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're back with even more BMW. Apparently, this is the BMW podcast.
Hey, we had to cover it.
Which is fine. Vincent's writing in from San Francisco Bay Area, and he right up front says, I am the BMW fanboy. So I came with challenges for our friend Vincent.
Did you?
But he is shopping, because here's what he's writing. He's shopping and just saying, guys, I've decided I want a BMW 2 Series. Which 2 Series is for me? That's the whole question. But I'm going to try to broaden your mind a bit, Vincent.
Interesting. I like this. All right. So his story is the 2 Series, yes. But backing up first, from 05 to 2015, he had an E90 325i that he got for $500 over invoice at the time. He said it wasn't his favorite car at the time because it replaced a 1995 M3. Interesting. So that was an E36 M3. But it was the first car that he paid off after 6 years, mm-hmm. and it was the most stripped-down model available. Yeah. He felt it was a very much of an accomplishment in his life, a symbol
sure.
of accomplishment.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And it was truly his car, and he always you know, kind of looked for the 335s or M3s. But this was his car, and he never thought he would be quite this attached to the car. So come to 2015, where he was unhappy at his job, we're sorry, and had a miserable commute. His wife convinced him to trade it in for an automatic, and he ended up leasing an F30 BMW 335i.
Yeah.
Which meant real horsepower, as he said. And he said, I found it frightening to be above 4,000 RPM. Well, that's where the fun is.
Yeah, exactly.
You like tape it off on your tack right there.
Well, but 4,000 can be frightening while commuting. 4,000 is awesome
commuting, everywhere else.
Yeah.
If the traffic is hurtling towards you, yes. So he still felt this connection is he liked it, but it was lost. The connection was lost with the electric power steering, softer suspension, and of course the size and weight gain of the 3 Series growing up in the market.
And that excellent ZF 8-speed transmission, excellent, but doesn't exactly increase the involvement. So he now feels like he's been pushed a little bit distant, even though the car has clearly been a great commuter.
Yeah. Well, fast forward to now, and his lease is over, and he and his wife, I was reading the email there, Vincent.
You've never met his wife.
I've never met his wife. It was not his wife and I. He and his wife ended up replacing the vehicle with a new G01 X3, so they got the xDrive 30 trim, and she's driving that daily.
Yeah.
And now he's commuting in an electric Fiat 500e.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I've seen very few of those cars, but they seem very
Fiat almost gave them away because it was all about the carbon offsets.
Yes.
And so they were giving away for like $99 a month leases and crazy things just to get them out in the market so they could have the write-off, which is a weird bait and switch thing.
And you're not wrong for commuting in that.
No,
you're
for
not.
Sure.
That's
for
an
sure.
excellent choice.
And it's funny because I actually saw it wasn't the weird Gucci version, but it was one of the extra little things
the
you get.
Gucci version.
Remember that? On the 500? Yeah. I saw a standard 500 today, not in a BART. And that car is just tall, period. And something about the way that they dressed up, if you will, the electric ones, they accentuate how tall and thin they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. All right. So he's thinking about trading this in, and he says, I like the not pumping gas part, which is nice, but the car's use and range is limited going to work and in-town errands, that kind of thing. So he's saving up right now for a car to call his again that has a manual transmission despite all the congestion in the San Francisco Bay Area. So the Fiat lease is coming to an end, and that's why he's landed on the 2 Series.
Yeah.
But the word he uses is crucial here. He says, I like the compactness, meaning I think you're attracted to the small size.
For sure,
2 Series.
For sure. And the 2 Series, here's the thing. Comparative to a lot of things, the 2 Series is not a small car. But compared to the rest of the BMW lineup and compared to most car makers' lineups,
pretty much
it's
their
small
smallest.
Car. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's thinking M2, which is a good choice.
Great, yeah.
But he heard the car may be too stiff. Yeah, it's definitely up there. I think you could be generally okay, but you've got real low-profile 19-inch tires on that car. I mean, it is definitely stiffer.
Yeah.
So could you do the compromise? Could you live with it? Maybe.
It depends on your tolerance level. My tolerance level for a stiff suspension is very high.
Yes, we know.
So, you know, that's the thing. The amount of rattle going on a Lotus Elise would shock most people. So that's
a lot.
Thing. What do you want to do? What's your tolerance level? I don't think the M2 is too stiff for normal driving, but for a lot of people in just a commute situation, yeah, it's going to start to bug you. So who are you as a driver? You know, I mean, I'm also the guy that would drive a Focus RS every day, and yet there are hordes of comments on the internet about why is the suspension this hard, which is a fair question.
I drive a Ford Focus RS every day.
Yeah, but it's definitely a stiff car. Same
kind
of thing.
It is. It just depends on how it's damped, I feel like. How it ends at the end of the travel.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's the difference there. So he's looking at 2 Series. He's looking at the M240i. I mean, that's the obvious choice after the M2.
Mm-hmm.
But then anything with the M Sport trim is also brilliant. I'm almost thinking if you're going to get a car, a BMW, get the M Sport. Get the Sport trim.
You need to, for sure. Though that's a requirement, I think.
Absolutely. So he's saying, you know, should I spec out the 230? He was liking the engine in the new X3, and he thought, all right, that engine combined with a manual, that might be the best way to go. So you're shooting towards being all BMW family again.
Yeah.
And so he's saying, do I remain faithful to the inline six, or what do I do? I mean, look, Vincent, BMW has built some wonderful V8s. The E39 M5 comes to mind.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful car. Yeah.
The E92 series, that M3 is a fantastic V8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty thirsty.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll say that. But I'm wondering, I think Todd's going to suggest some alternatives.
For sure.
Yeah. As will I. Mm-hmm. You could probably see where mine is. I will say, if it's the 2 Series you're going for, then you've got to be able to consider the 2011 1 Series M Coupe.
Okay.
You said compact,
mm-hmm.
and then earlier in your email, you alluded to the electric steering and things being lost in the suspension.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the M2's up there, but if you're even going to consider that, I'm saying the 1M.
Okay.
And, you know, it might be considered sacrilege to commute in such a car that is demanding to be at the track or demanding to be on a canyon road, but you can do that on the weekends.
Yeah. Well, I would just applaud you for driving that car all the time. I'm the guy that get a 1M and drive it all the time.
There you go. So
absolutely.
If you're saving
that's
money.
That's really cool. Yeah, I see that.
And, okay, I mean, I know this car's value will go down, But by virtue of them only being built one model year, I think it will go down more slowly.
Oh, for sure.
Just
for
a
sure.
guess.
I mean,
even the higher mileage cars are still really expensive.
You can't really touch those for less than $50,000. But since you're talking M2, clearly that's in the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if you were to buy a brand new M2 right now or a used 1M right now, that M2 is going to drop like a stone compared to the 1M. It just is, because it's the brand new car and the 1M is the unique thing.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I'm also looking at Caymans for you.
Okay, all right.
And I specifically will call out the 987. Despite the electric steering, despite, mm-hmm. you know, the larger car, I still think this is a car you need to go drive in comparison to the M2.
Okay.
Every other, or 2 Series in general, every other car that gets compared to the M2 or the 2 Series in general, I think loses. Hmm. Let's talk about Mercedes and Infiniti and Acura and all the cars that size that mm-hmm. would compete. In terms of price, amenities,
sure,
power,
sure,
all those
sure.
kinds of stuff.
See where you're going.
I'm all about the 2 Series. But what about the Cayman? Could be a nice commute car, nice place to be, and then
yeah.
all the things you want to do. You've got great roads in the Bay Area.
Yeah, for sure.
North and south of the Bay Area, actually.
And, you know, yeah, you want to go manual, but I do think, and I actually had not really gone too far down that road, even though I touched on it. You'll see what I mean in a minute. But you could actually have a discussion with yourself about PDK.
You could.
I mean,
you
want to go manual, and yeah. I obviously am going to applaud that as a guy that drives manual cars. But I don't sit in traffic much.
That's the difference. So, and the Bay Area is the difference, that, I feel like.
For sure. So I do think I'm going to give you a pass, honestly, Vincent. If I get that you want a manual for the engagement, and I totally applaud you. And if you want to do that, I will applaud you from afar. But if you said, you know what, I can't commute. I can't really do it. And you wanted to get an automatic, you get a free pass here because of where you are. And the PDK is the extra free pass, if you will. That I do see where you're going, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I was thinking, okay, you know, the new RS3 or the Mercedes yeah, A classes, yeah. whatever that is, they don't come in manual transmission. They're
true.
Worthy cars
true. Yeah, yeah.
and have great merits on their own,
mm-hmm.
but it just doesn't check that manual transmission box for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I ran all over the place. I'm going to come back to the BMW discussion in a minute, but I ran all over the place here because, Vincent, here's the thing. I'm giving you homework. I'm giving you please go drive these homework. If you're going to go buy a BMW, I'm going to come back around to the BMW 2 Series in a second because that may be where you land. I get that you like them. Fine. But you have to go drive some stuff first. You have to, just because I want you to walk away and go, oh, I see what these other options are now, because I feel like there's some BMW blinding going on here. Where I want to get you driving okay. some other stuff so that if you wind up in a 2 Series, great, awesome, but you can actually speak to, here's the other things I drove that have nothing to do with BMW.
You're at least, you're saying justified more in your decision rather than
gravitating
towards the badge, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. You've had good experience with BMWs. Okay, fine, that's great, but let's go drive some other stuff that is very worthy stuff. And I was looking at sports cars or enthusiast cars that you could track, but you could also commute in.
Okay.
Please go drive an 86. But if you have to turbo it, I don't care what you do. Drive an 86 in some way that you're not driving it in traffic. I realize, look, I've done traffic in it. It'll do traffic. But drive it somewhere on a back road so you get a sense
of
this
that's where
car.
The car comes alive.
So you get
86.
A sense of what it does well.
Yeah.
The Mazda MX-5. Go drive one of those.
Yeah.
That is that car is one of those cars that the gearbox is easy enough. You could commute in that car with a 6-speed and not ever worry about it. I mean, the FRS almost, but the MX-5 for sure.
True.
Really light gearbox, easy to work with. Commute in that car.
Are you saying the ND generation, the brand new?
Yeah, why not?
MX-5?
Go look at the RF while you're at it.
I saw one of those the other day.
They're just great looking. They're just
really
great looking cars. So anyway, so drive the MX-5, and then you brought it up as well. Drive either a Boxster or a Cayman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a viable option here. So we're all of those you can do manuals, and then I have two autos, but you need to drive them. Either or. I'm going to Mercedes.
Are you?
Either the CLA AMG 45 or the GLA AMG 45.
Okay.
You can't get manuals, but they are fire breathers. They have personality. They have a ton of power, but you're in a Mercedes interior.
We don't talk about the CLA 45 much.
I know.
We've always gravitated towards the GLA,
I kind of do, but I think if we're talking cars, let's at least look at that CLA AMG 45.
What the weight difference is between those two cars.
Good question. I have to look it up. I hadn't thought about it right now. So anyway, so drive both those cars. I've given you essentially five cars to drive. You could say GLA, CLA, maybe drive one of them, but still 4 to 5 cars to drive because I want you to have all of that experience and then go, do I want the BMW or not? And if you do, okay, I get it. You're a BMW guy. which brings me back to the 2 Series.
Okay.
How are you going to use this? Or to put it another way, I know you're going to commute in it. What do you want it to feel like? Because I like your 1M a lot because of the, well, because of all the reasons the 1M is awesome. But
well, yeah.
If you want kind of steering feel and rotation, then I'm going to say go smaller engine. I'm going to say go to the 228 or the 230.
Because of a lighter front
end? Because of the lighter front end. Those cars are sharp. They feel light on their feet. They're cool. They're really cool. That turbo is surprisingly robust, surprisingly fast. I mean, you drive that 2 Series and you drive the FRS and you go, explain to me again why the FRS doesn't have a turbo? I mean, really, yeah, you do, because those cars are so similar in so many other ways. So if you want a light rotation, you need to go with the smaller engine. Definitely get M Sport. If you're wanting kind of the more all-around heavy duty, then you do the M235 or the M240, depending upon are you going used or new. So
right,
that,
right.
To me, is the dividing line. Because we've tracked, obviously, the M235 a lot. We've driven it on the road. We really like that car. I'm not going to take anything away from it. It's just if you wanted the smaller, lighter feel, that's where the lighter engine comes in.
Sure. I remember tracking that 228i a few years ago.
Really surprising with the ZF8 speed and everything. It was really impressive.
Yeah.
It was a car that the more I pushed it, the more I was surprised by it.
You know, I came to that car thinking this is just going to be a cheap BMW, and they kind of forgot about it, and they're just making it for a... you know, welcome to BMW kind of car.
Mm-hmm.
They paid attention to that car.
And it was the base motor with the 8-speed,
with
8-speed auto, but it did have the M-Sport pack, and it was a great all-arounder.
That makes the difference. So, again, whatever you get, it's got to be the M-Sport pack, any car. But I keep coming back to that M Coupe. Such a unique car.
If you can do a 1M, rock the 1M. I mean, I will never turn anyone away from that car unless it's one that I was shopping for, and then I'd rather have it. But yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because that's where you and I really converge, is that 1M.
You're right. That's where our proclivities, as they are, that's where they merge.
Completely. I mean, I could see one in both of our garages, honestly.
Yep.
Which
is really weird.
Yeah.
Which is really weird because the Lotus and the Cayman really show people who we are as drivers and owners.
Mm-hmm.
They're both mid-engine cars.
Very much so.
They both, you know, original MSRPs were similar, and yet they're incredibly different in that world. But yes, you're right. We both converge on the 1M and just go, yep, that's brilliant.
All right. Well, speaking of brilliant, thank you guys, both of you guys, for writing in. And lots of great questions on social media. This is a question that I love that I've got to get to right away on Instagram from Matty OC. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but he said, design question, why did the industry default to cars being shiny?
Mm-hmm. I had a feeling you'd run for this one.
And then the second part of the question is, while we're at it, let's have your take on Mansory. We'll get to Mansory in just a moment.
You already know where that's going. No,
we'll get there. Hang on. But shiny cars, well, let's back up to the invention of the car. Let's go to cars before they had a body side, before there were panels. They were just simply open cars.
Yeah.
They were just defined by the materials. Okay, mm-hmm. So wood, bit of metal.
They were wagons without horses.
They really were.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the top, maybe it didn't have a top. But then as things progressed, cars became a status symbol and started to become that way. And how do you make a status symbol your own? You start to customize things. And it was Harley Earl in the 1920s who was the first color and trim designer and really looked at cars now as the planned obsolescence and disposability and the desirable object and then starting to set them apart by unique trims and looking at the car as a, again, status symbol. And again, anything in our lives, what do we want to do to it? We want to make it our own. Your iPhone case, your Android case, whatever that is, your phone case.
Yeah.
Everybody wants a customized thing to it. So think back to where cars started and where they evolved and came from just the raw materials. And then by virtue of production processes, now we have fake wood, fake chrome, fake looking metals.
Yeah.
Back in the day, they were honest. The material that you thought was that indeed was polished aluminum or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the car manufacturers today that still do that, like Aston Martin, well, you pay for that now because
it's
handcrafted.
Yeah.
Wow, this feels like aluminum. It's because it is.
Yeah.
It was hand milled, hand carved, whatever that was. Same with the wood and all those kinds of things. So again, I find it interesting that over time, a way to make the car stand out, and then, you know, you paint it a color, and then what attracts your eye? Things that are shiny. I mean, we're like raccoons going after a piece of foil.
Well, yeah, we are. Well, I have a question, though, that as you're making me think about this. If you think about what cars rise up out of, think about like your typical Main Street in like 1910.
Okay.
That's a dirty environment. It's a very dirty environment.
Very much so.
If you want to show yourself to have some opulence, what do you have? You have something clean and shiny, which is difficult.
Very difficult. And in the... let's say that the beginning of cars, when horses and cars still existed, as you're saying, the amount of manure that piled up in New York City was staggering. Imagine the smells and the disposal and the just from all the horses. It was actually a huge problem.
Yeah.
But then along comes this clean,
it's a bit interesting beautiful, what we think of as clean, depending on what decade we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Things have changed, let's put it that way. But
yeah.
But, you know, moving towards a status symbol object, what are you going to do? You want it to stand out.
Yeah.
And again, shiny and add color, and then processes about how to coat metal, because then we had to have something around the car to protect the occupants, which meant sheet metal and body sides.
Yeah.
But you don't want to just make it ugly, so you paint it a color.
Yeah.
But then you want to coat the metal so it won't rust and fall apart too soon.
Yeah.
Then Saturn came along, and then Saturn went away, fortunately. The Tupperware cars.
You made a jump, and then you came back. I see where you went, yeah.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
Because you think composite bodywork,
yeah.
Even though Lotus went that way too, but, you know, mold in the color kind of thing.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's because of cost, you know, all those kinds of things. And so you find ways to prepare the material, make it look like something else, and make it stand out, make it eye-catching, make it beautiful, because cars are now status symbols.
The new shiny object.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm going to have one.
Yeah, it really is.
Funny.
Okay, so Mansory. There's elements I like about Mansory, but then they go way too far. It's what a cool idea that has diamond dust embedded in it.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be the Mansories, because there's always going to be people who have so much money they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And it's up to companies like Mansory to figure out, hey, let's make it diamond encrusted whatever. And it's like a Rolex that it's already expensive. Then you add $35,000 worth of diamonds to it.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Because we can, though. Yeah. We can do that. Mansory is like the ultimate yes man. We can do that. You know, well, you know what else we could do while we're trying? No, nobody ever goes, you know what? Stop.
I mean, there's going to be people who just, I can already afford the Chiron.
Yeah.
But let's just cover it in diamonds, or let's just, because I can, because I don't know what else to do with my money.
I guess.
And so they figured out, hey, we can meet that market niche. We can do that.
With money. I can do that. That's funny.
Want to throw money at it? Sure.
Proprofluorine, I believe that's right, on Instagram asked a hysterical question that I don't know that has a clear answer. But he starts off by going, my friend's wife is, and I have to stop you right there, is this really your friend's wife, or is this your wife in disguise? This is one of those discussions.
Asking well, I
have
for a friend.
I have a friend who, yeah, exactly. But anyway, I'm just going to say that it is what you're claiming. So my friend's wife, he says, in my opinion, not the best driver. He describes her as aggressive, lead-footed, indignant, road-ragey, overconfident, distracted, and follows closely. That is the recipe for disaster right there. So you've had an interesting thought, and that is obviously it's your friend's wife. You don't want to create an issue, or it's your wife. You really don't want to create an issue. Either way, you want to get this solved. So you're wondering about recommending a driving course. Does this help, or does it make her worse? Great question. I have a couple of avenues to follow up on this, though. Do you think she'd go to a driving course? Is it the kind of thing where maybe you and your wife and your friend and his wife can all go?
Couples therapy.
Seriously.
Love it.
Can you all go? Because that, I think, would be cool. The kind of the entrance into doing it. All four of you go. And you make it an outing. And then also, in the process of making an outing, you kind of subtly make it aggressive.
You're still going to be talking about your feelings.
But you end up making it unknowingly competitive. But here's the great thing where I think this could be helpful. Driving instructors, the good ones, don't pull punches. If you're a bad driver doing something wrong, they're riding right seat.
Yeah.
They will tell you that it's not okay.
Yeah.
Now, the only potential way that I can see this actually working against you is this. if she has a day and has an instructor that kind of tells her, yeah, you're good, now she's going to feel like, I've even taken a driving course, so all the driving I do is fine. The problem with a driving course is you're not going to wind up in a traffic situation where things like following too closely or being too aggressive are a problem. That's the only downside I see here.
Good point.
What you need, honestly, what you need is something like a skid car exercise and an instructor that's pretty hardcore, that just will not tolerate you doing anything other than right.
Hmm. It's excellent.
That would be very helpful, I think. But if it's just an instructor who's like, yeah, you're doing fine, which I've had those guys too. If you have the people that are, yeah, you're doing fine, and she never realizes that she's overly aggressive and it could be problematic, then you're right. You're worse off. I think the four of you should go, though.
I like this.
And see how this goes. I also wonder about just maybe a bridge step. What if the four of you go karting?
Oh, good.
Because I also wonder, everybody thinks they're a really good driver until you start to drive with really good drivers and you realize, I'm not very good at this. You have to have somebody that is much better than you to kind of knock you down a peg and be like, yeah, I really ought to be better. Karting is a great place to start that.
It's an interesting idea.
So anyway, there's my thoughts there.
Like it. Well, Cajun Michael asked a question that is excellent as well. He says, what is the most ridiculous thing you've done to preserve a fresh car wash?
Oh, that is a perfect question for you. For
Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
He said, just now I decided to forego picking up dinner on the way home so I could get his car in the garage before a rainstorm hit. Well done, my friend. Go hungry.
Oh, no.
Go without sleep. Go without food. You got your car preserved from the rain. I love it.
My wife and son are going, you realize we are still hungry, right? Yes, but there are other cars.
Yeah. I admit to doing silly things. I do. I admit to leaving and trying to stall till the rain has stopped, or, you know, doing silly things to get home first.
That's funny.
I admit to all of that. And in Utah, you know, the car washes in the winter, they don't last very long.
No.
It's good to do it periodically, just get the salt off.
Yes.
And, you know, if the car, said chosen car, is subjected to the salt. But, you know, then we have our dry, warm, warm-ish winter days that we can get the cars out and still go. Yeah. But yeah, I've done silly things just because I'm like, I've come right home and I've instantly dried the car off if it does get wet. I've sort of done the, you know, waterless car wash thing, even though there's water in the car. I take Speed Shine and
of course you do.
Yeah. I've been known to do some silly things too. It's trying to think of something more ridiculous than that, but it's up there, something similar to that.
I'm going to move on to Bioshock writing in on Twitter, and he said, okay, my fiance says we need four doors for when we have children.
Mm.
Do we really need to go that route, or can we still get something hot? Now, obviously, you can get something like an E90 M3, which is plenty hot, and four doors, but I see where you're going. You still want to have something that is a classic two-door fun car. And then you talk about the fact that one of your earliest memories was sitting in your dad's Camaro where you couldn't see over the dash because, of course, when all of us were kids, you didn't have big car seats with missiles. So he was looking at the dash of his dad's Corvette and just thinking, my dad is my hero. My dad is awesome. And you kind of want that in your life. There's a lot of things to unpack here, Bioshocks. I'm going to see if I can take a couple different avenues here. First off, I'm going to submit to you, don't – and I've done this, so I'm actually saying don't from experience – don't buy the car that you don't need yet.
Hmm.
She's your fiance, so you're not married, and it sounds like she's not pregnant. So you're going to have kids eventually, but when is that? Couldn't you theoretically, and I don't know your time frames, but couldn't you theoretically buy a car now, get married, she gets pregnant, you have a kid, you're getting ready to get rid of that car anyway. Why are you buying the four-door family car this minute? You're not there yet. So that's the first question. That's the first question. Is when,
unless
when,
she is pregnant.
Exactly. But what's your real timeline?
Yeah.
Because the way you submit this is for when you have kids, suggesting eventually. Well, so don't buy that car now. It's like buying a minivan when it's just the two of you. Don't do that. Don't do that. You don't need it. But then back to your other question. And there are like multiple layers of this, I feel like. You even described your dad. You said he was loud and smelled like gasoline. I want that. It's hysterical. Which brings me to my son this week.
Okay.
I pulled the Lotus out. And when I pulled the Lotus out, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to take him to school in the Lotus too.
Nice. School bus yellow.
And exactly. Perfectly. Yeah, exactly. And he actually got in it, and I drove it all day, and then I picked him up from his activity after school, still in the Lotus. And when we opened the Lotus, again, I've been driving it all day and having a love affair with the car again.
So funny.
But I'm not trying to push that on him. I know he likes it, but I'm not talking about how much I like the car. But one of the things I thought about all day, every time I got in the car, was I thought about the Lotus. They all have a very specific smell. All Lotus Elises smell the same. Everyone I've ever driven smells the same.
What is the smell?
Well, it's not exactly like it, but it is in that realm of the classic cars that smell like gasoline and oil and leathers and those kind of things. It's not quite as good as that old smell,
okay,
but it's in the same vein, okay? It's in that world more so than a lot of modern cars.
Sure.
Okay? But I haven't said anything about this. My son, I hadn't told you this yet. My son climbs in after his after-school activity, and he climbs in the Lotus, and he goes, I love the way this car smells.
Really?
And I said, really? He goes, it smells like motor oil. And I thought, you have no idea what motor oil smells like. But I love that that's what your little 8-year-old brain put together.
That's awesome.
I thought that was awesome. And that brought me back to the fact that my dad's Jag had a smell.
And you connect with that every time we drive a car that smells like
every
that.
Every time I drive any car from that era that smells that way, I have that memory. And I thought of that when my son had that moment. I thought, that's interesting. When will that come back around? So BioShock, I would love that for you. I'm going to say to you, there's no reason to not have that. And honestly, depending upon how you structure your life, there's no reason to have that even after you have kids. Hmm. You can still have fun cars. You just got to arrange your life around that. We bought a GMC Acadia with 7 seats and only ended up having 1 kid and went, why do we have this enormous car? That's why I'm saying don't buy the car you don't need yet.
Right.
So that's the headline. Hopefully that helps.
In the future, our kid's going to say, man, this car smells like burnt lightning or, you know, lightning possibly burned a tree down.
You know those,
I really
we've talked about Dyson
love those
before.
Old electric cars.
We talked about Dyson before and those ion things he makes, those like fans that have ion.
Right.
They have an ion smell.
Yeah, they
do. Electric cars smell like that.
It's going to be the fond memories of that old electric car. That's way in the future.
Dad's first Mr. Fusion smelled like... Wait, no, that's wrong.
Totally. Well, that ties in with a photo on Instagram, which is great. There's another question from Mr. Kid 37. It says, in your opinion, is the car enthusiast community growing or shrinking, and why? This is great. I love this kind of thinking, and I believe that it's growing. And I believe it's growing by virtue of events that people who like to be around cars and car shows and doing something like eating cheese and drinking wine and talking about the nice things in life.
Yeah.
But there's also just the car shows of appreciation of sheet metal and, you know, getting together and you know, the Bob's Big Boy car shows in LA and just hanging out, talking about cars.
Yeah.
I think people are becoming more aware and I guess with the proliferation of autonomy and electric cars, I think that's pushing people more towards, man, I remember, like you said, my dad's Jag and, you know, whatever that is, and just
I wonder
kind of digging this more. Anything that is set up around cars, people can relate to more than boats or planes or any other thing. Those
it's
are
more accessible.
High-end categories.
I see that.
Very much more so. We all can relate to cars in some way.
Yeah,
I don't care who you are. Most of us on the planet can relate to a car.
Yeah.
You like it, you hate it. And hey, there's an event with cars or a museum or whatever. Okay, yeah, I could be into it.
It is fairly accessible. I see that. I don't agree that it's growing. You and I have talked about this a few times of late, and we do disagree on this. But I think that the folks that are into it are getting more into it. And I think that those of us that like it are embedding ourselves further. And look, for the sake of this podcast alone, I hope it's growing because we want everybody.
Honestly,
it's our thing. I actually think that the difference between a car enthusiast and not is if you've owned a car you've loved in your life. And if you've only gone through a series of appliances since you were 16, you probably have no car love. If I put you in a car you loved, I bet I could change your mind. I truly believe that.
So you're saying solidification.
Exactly.
The community.
I think the people that are into cars and love cars because of things like autonomy and it being taken away from us, it sounds doom and gloom, but you follow what I mean.
Sure.
That ability being taken to some degree or technology kills it, if you will, I think that's making those of us that like it go, no, I really do like this, but I don't feel like it's growing. I hope it is, but I don't feel like it is.
I think that people are discovering this And by virtue of discovery, it's quality.
I hope so. If you're listening right now and you have a friend who doesn't like their car, will you introduce them to this show, please? Because like them to like their car. Who knows what that can bring? Who knows?
I love your questions. We've got to get to more of them on subsequent podcasts, but thank you very much. We will end this for now, but as we wrap things up, please find us on all the social media, but Vimeo. Watch all of our seasons there.
All of season two is up there right now.
Watch it there. There's stuff coming out on YouTube. We are off to L.A. to go shoot the Kia Stinger GT2.
Mm-hmm.
And
season three.
A BMW 430i. So that awesome. Is coming.
Season three, yeah. One of those episodes. And we do have a Model 3 Chevy Bolt piece coming as part of season three. Those are two that we are either in the process of shooting or already have pieces in the can, which is very cool. That does not count the other four that we are still in process of. Holy season three.
Yeah. I just decided today I'm going to save my money for a Porsche Mission E. That's the car I want in the future.
All right.
Anyway,
note. We'll see where that goes. Wait. So you're saying we ended the podcast on a Porsche? I am not surprised.
Ooh, managed to do that one. All right, guys. Thank you again. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to next time. Cheers.